Republican lawmakers still trying to change the rules just a couple of months out from Election Day. WCHL News Director Blake Hodge joins us now in the studio, and we're still trying to actually read through these two bills because they just got publicly released, but one of them has to do with the state constitutional amendments and how they'll appear on the ballot. That was what we knew they were going to be going to Raleigh to talk about. And the other one has to do with that race for state Supreme Court, which has three candidates on the ballot. And this other bill has to do with what we're actually going to see on the ballot for that race as well, right?
Yeah, so where do you want to start? I'm sorry if you just said that I was
trying. You know what? Let's start with the we talked about the constitutional amendments bill already. So let's talk about the we did that yesterday. So we'll get to that, but I want to talk about the state Supreme Court race.
The Supreme Court
as well.
Race.
Yeah.
Okay. So you'll remember just a couple of short weeks ago, Tom Jensen was on this very program from Public Policy Polling talking about the Supreme Court race and the latest context, and that was that you were, in a bit of a surprise, going to have multiple Republicans on the ballot for the state Supreme Court seat. Mm-hmm. And if you'll remember, the General Assembly eliminated judicial primaries this year. So everybody that filed is going to be on the ballot. What that can lead to is a concern about splitting the vote, basically, in Republicans, Democrats, whoever. If you have two Democrats, if you have two Republicans, that's going to possibly lead to Republicans voting for each of those candidates rather than one candidate. And in a plurality race like this, whoever finishes on top wins.
And that was particularly relevant because the General Assembly had also passed a law making sure that everyone's party affiliation was going to be listed on the ballot, even if it wasn't a technically partisan election with the judicial primary.
And
so everyone's party affiliation was going to be on the ballot. So if you're a Republican and you go to the polls, you see two Republicans. If you have no other information, you might vote for one Republican, another Republican might vote for a different one, and then that vote gets split.
Exactly. Yeah. And Tom pointed out at that
time, all of this is foreshadowing, by the way, to what the bill is going to say.
Yeah, it's fun lead up here.
Yeah, it's great.
Tom pointed out at the time that Republican voters have a tendency to prefer voting for a male candidate in some cases as well, rather than a female candidate. In this particular case, Barbara Jackson is the Republican incumbent to this seat on the Supreme Court, which is a 4-3 Democratic lean at this point in time. And the Republican, the second Republican who had filed for this seat, Chris Anglin, is, as you may have just determined there, a male. But Chris had just affiliated with the Republican Party shortly before filing for this seat. Mm-hmm. So what we heard a couple of different things today coming and leaning on a lot of reporters here working on this special session who are actually in Raleigh, Colin Campbell and Lauren Horsch, both with NC Insider, Travis Fain with WRAL has also been doing a lot of reporting on this throughout the day today. So certainly leaning on them a bit in this as well. There have been a rumor coming out of the House side of things that there would be a consideration of a bill that would require a majority, 50% plus one, to be able to win that election.
Yeah, we should say that the Democratic candidate here is Anita Earls, and she is the only Democrat who filed to run.
And Tom's perception of this at the time was that Anita had a good chance of winning against Barbara Jackson heads up. But then if you add in another Republican choice, obviously that increases the chances in his mind from a political science and a public opinion polling perspective on this, that Anita Earls would have a greater chance, the Democrat again, have a greater chance of winning that Supreme Court seat and furthering the Democratic hold on the state Supreme Court, which is an interesting juxtaposition amongst the kind of other statewide politics that we have right now in North Carolina. So that first proposal seems to be dead before it was officially filed into a bill that would require a majority plus one to win the seat. What we have received instead from the Senate is a bill that would basically take Chris Anglin out of this race as far as being a Republican candidate. It says that whereas the General Assembly finds that listing only partisan affiliations that a candidate has held for 90 days prior to filing would reduce the opportunity for voter confusion. So reducing the opportunity for voter confusion.
I'm glad they're looking out for
clearly,
us here.
What we're here for today. Yeah. Would give do a couple
sarcasm,
of
by the way. If y'all are listening out there, that was my sarcasm voice.
This bill would do one of two things, basically. It would either take away the Republican, the R, mm-hmm. on Chris Anglin's filing for this so he could stay in the race, be on the ballot basically as an unaffiliated candidate, and we go from there with a Republican, a Democrat, and an unaffiliated candidate, or just drop out of the race.
Yep.
Those seem to be the options that would be present under this law. We have not had votes on this. We've not had committee hearings on this as of this moment. There were two committee hearings that are scheduled to take place kind of back-to-back in the Senate before they are scheduled to reconvene at 5 o'clock, but those times are always very tentative. So this could extend very well past that. Also, if anything is going to get done on this, the House would have to vote on it today as well in this special session. And House Speaker Tim Moore has indicated that he is not planning on being here past today. So ultimately, if this is going to get approved, it would have to pass through both chambers today and be ratified and sent to Governor Roy Cooper, who would almost certainly veto this bill.
Oh, yeah.
Just even if nothing else, just
because it's a ridiculous bill.
Because.
Yeah.
At this point. So then they would have to come back to override the veto, which would, you know, would
probably
almost certainly happen
in
its own right.
In a different day. So, I mean, it's like, it's not a ridiculous bill, right? Like, for Chris Anglin to, was he independent who declared himself a Republican? Was he a Democrat who declared himself a Republican?
I would be speculating at that point, right? So I don't want to speculate, but he was not an affiliated Republican and then declared himself and filed, right?
Clearly,
so that could be seen by the Republican supermajority as an angle from England to try to
So to sum up, Republicans earlier this year changed the rules of the election in order to try to give themselves an advantage in this particular state Supreme Court race, hoping that their incumbent would be their only candidate and a whole bunch of Democrats would file, made sure that everyone's party affiliation would appear on the ballot to try to split the vote. Didn't work out quite that way that they wanted to, and somebody probably gamed the system in order to give Democrats an advantage instead of Republicans. So now they're in special session trying to do take-backsies on the bill that they passed earlier this year.
And they got out of town.
Is what's happening.
Basically. They got out of town quickly, so they have to come back to a special session to address something else. And while we're here, let's do this as well.
Yeah, because that isn't even the bill that they said they were in town to address.
No.
That would be this other bill over here. So let's go to that.
Well, I think you mentioned a couple of things there that are kind of either important to reiterate or point out. This all happened after judicial primaries were done away with.
Yes.
So that's an important piece of this. And the Democrats either through pre-filing conversations or whatever it is, are kind of solely behind the one candidate that has filed it and made that known by no other candidates filing. So there's clearly support for Anita Earls already among the Democratic Party. And whether any of these other things could be classified as anything more than political maneuvering, I think that
obviously not.
Well,
like,
right. Yeah, so
I don't think it's.
And that goes for the England filing session too. Yeah.
I don't think that it would be. I don't think it would constitute objective journalism to suggest that it's anything other than political maneuvering, because it so obviously is.
Yeah. So this other bill that was filed by by several Republican sponsors here is talking about the ballot designations on referenda, which we are going to have six constitutional amendments to vote on this fall in North Carolina. Jerry Cohen is a longtime legislative staff member. He was involved in a lot of bill writing over several decades in the General Assembly, and is kind of He's very active on Twitter, and he is a bank of institutional knowledge to be able to lean on and refer to, and put out there a little while ago on Twitter that the three members that would be writing the constitutional amendments, two of them are statewide elected Democrats, and the other is not an elected official at all, but appointed by the Republican General Assembly. So it was going to be interesting to see how two Democrats were going to write captions, the short descriptions that would appear on the ballot of what people would be voting for six amendments that were pushed by a Republican-heavy General Assembly. So after that was put out there, there started to be more discussion about this. That Constitutional Amendments Commission then put out a call for public suggestions of what you would like to see taken into account on the ballot, and Jerry Cohen put forward six those things of those suggestions of his, and he said multiple times, I have not consulted with anyone, not paid by anybody. These are what I would put forward. And some of those seem to have riled the Republican-led General Assembly enough to call the special session in general. Mm-hmm. First off, the Senator, Senate Pro Tem Phil Berger said as much today. So what we have at this point is a House bill that has already been pushed through the House and is awaiting a full kind of procedural vote. And the Senate would take all of the phrasing away and basically just say constitutional amendment. It says the proposed amendments to the North Carolina Constitution would be listed in the chronological order in which the proposals were approved by the General Assembly. And then it says proposed amendment shall be designated by only the, and now at this point, the phrase constitutional amendment prior to setting forth the referendum question. Mm-hmm. What that said before was that it would be designated by only the short caption provided by the Constitutional Amendments Publication Commission. That has all been eliminated in this new proposal that has been put
forward. So that's a bill to eliminate the commission's work, basically, and substitute the titles of the amendments. Is that what it basically is?
Well, it basically wouldn't give you a caption at this point. It would say constitutional amendment, and then you would have the question in front of you of what you whether you want to vote yes or no on the constitutional amendment.
Well, it's got to have a title. It doesn't just say Constitutional Amendment 1.
Well, it said prior to the referendum question would then come at that point.
Okay.
So rather than agreeing to any type of caption language, as we kind of thought they might do with some work in committees or whatever today.
So they're just
it's kind of eliminating that.
At all.
It will eliminate the caption.
Yeah.
So that's one way to do it.
Yeah.
And we'll, this also is, you know, legislation that presumably, again, Lean would love to be able to ask some questions to other people that know more about this, but with the rate at which we're moving in the General Assembly right now, having to move would have to, again, be signed.
Yeah, they'll already be scheduling the veto override vote by the time dinner rolls around.
Yeah, and we are on a very tight deadline on this, as we talked about yesterday, in terms of getting this done, approved, and submitted to the state, what was the State Board of Elections, which is now the Bipartisan Board of Elections and Ethics Enforcement, I believe, to get it the information to them in order to just logistically and procedurally get things on the ballot, you know, ready to go, printed, and then sent out in short order for absentee ballot voting to begin here over the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, and we've talked about this in the context of gerrymandering, right?
Yeah.
Where
everything should be talked about in the context of gerrymandering,
and I've expressed some frustration with what has gone on in the last few years in the General Assembly. It should be said for point of emphasis that none of this is new. None of it is limited to one party or another historically. Mm. None of it is limited to North Carolina or the General Assembly. This is something that has been an issue and a serious problem across the country since time immemorial. It is just really frustrating to see elected officials who should have some semblance of concern about democratic institutions of governance, spending so much time and energy and money.
Taxpayer dollars
as well, because the special session is costing like $50,000 or however much a day, for no other reason than to game an upcoming election to try to give themselves a little bit of an extra advantage. Like, that's really just sad.
And this is
the News and Observer, I think, called it a hot mess in their editorial. I'm just going to go with sad.
This is
hashtag sad exclamation point. All caps now, because it's
all caps. Yeah. This is a General Assembly that has been elected several times under maps that have been deemed unconstitutional as well.
Yeah.
So, and that, again, plays a part of this, because we talk about not that the Republican majority is a thin margin by any means. I mean, it's a supermajority, but the supermajority is by a thin margin. And the supermajority allows Democratic Governor Roy Cooper's vetoes to be overridden easily. So that's what we talk about whenever we're talking about gerrymandering and the real, you know, it seems like such an abstract topic in so many ways, but those are the real impacts of these things, the real impacts of having this many of any particular political party be able to be in power at one point, whenever you have a governor who is the opposite party, to be able to basically render that governor useless in terms of legislative authority on these types
Which also does have a history in North Carolina.
Exactly.
Like the North Carolina governor's office has always been among the weakest, if not the weakest,
in the
U.S. And Governor Cooper today is more powerful than I think most governors in North Carolina history.
Well, he can run for a second term in a couple of years.
And he has veto power, which most governors did not.
But he has just general veto power. Yeah. So
that didn't exist until the 90s, I think.
Yeah, right. Well, a governor couldn't run for a second term
until very recently.
80s, maybe. Yeah. Late 70s or in 80s. So, in that context...
So that actually I can almost see, because at least there's a history of it. But.
Well, in that context, we're talking about judicial elections as well, and whether a party is listed or not listed on the ballot has also been a political kind of football over the years of whether Democrats felt like for a long time they were losing judicial races because party was on the ballot. Mm-hmm. So you strip it from the ballot.
Right. Now you're putting it back on, taking it off and putting it back on.
To act like any of this is unique in North Carolina's history would be incorrect.
Would be completely incorrect.
But, you know, the rate at which these things are happening at this point in the fairly obvious nature with as to why they are happening, I don't believe is as common throughout.
To act like
history.
It's principled is also completely incorrect. Like the whereas preambles of all of these bills are just laughable,
I'm going to do that one more time. Yeah. Whereas the General Assembly finds that listing only partisan affiliations that a candidate has held for 90 days prior to filing would reduce the opportunity for voter confusion. I don't think anybody generally would disagree with that. But to talk about voter confusion whenever you're back in a special session because you're afraid about what other people are going to write on six constitutional amendments that you're trying to push through in the last year that you're probably going to have a supermajority, to talk about voter confusion then seems to be a bit
ironic. Hot mess. Hashtag sad, all caps, exclamation point. All right, we'll keep following that. But the bills have not been voted on, so these are just...
They've been not totally voted on.
They've not been passed, right?
Entirely.
Right.
Yeah, they've made it... The caption bill has made it through the House.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate bill about the judicial aspect of this is getting committee hearings currently.
Okay.
So they're in the process of being voted on.
All right. We'll keep following that. Blake Hodge, thank you so much.